The following program is brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice, and all economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal. Any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any person for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax, and penalties may be imposed on such persons, and each listener should seek advice from their own tax advisor, legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice. Nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes. Very excited to be back in the studio live after a couple of weeks on the road. And next week, unfortunately, I'll be on the road again. But we'll have a live show with it'll be Wayne and Ryan from our office. And they're going to be talking to people who have a paycheck every single week. They're paycheck people and that expect to have a pension, Social Security, and rely somewhat on their personal savings in retirement. So they'll be talking to a lot of the public employees, some of the private sector that work for companies that still offer a pension. It'll be a really good show. I'm sure I'll call in to check in on the guys, but that'll be a good show next week. Had a pretty cool thing happen to me just today. We had our shredding event. Thank you for everyone that came out from 2 to 5 o'clock today at Comprehensive Financial on South College Avenue. Hundreds of people came through. A lot of shredding going on, a lot of jaw-jacking, a lot of storytelling, a lot of football throwing. It was a good time, and I would slip in the office, do a little work, come back out, and then, you know, of course, they gave me heck for not being out there all the time, but that's just the way the office rolls. Here's the thing. I was talking to a gentleman that I know. His name's Lance, and he works for Boom and Bus, which is the HS Dent or the Harry Dent organization. You know, that's a global organization. They hold conferences now all over the country, 380,000 members of this group. They do conferences in Vancouver, Sydney, Australia. They're going to do one in Palm Springs in October. I'm going to go to that one. But here's the thing. They called out of the blue and said, hey, our marketing department is wanting to do an interview with Harry and Rodney, Harry Dent. And your name came up as someone that we thought would be really good to either do a television interview with them or a radio interview. And I'm like, that's great. I mean, this is pretty humbling stuff. And then once the broadcast is done, then it gets blasted out to their 380,000 members. So I guess I'm going to do that. So their marketing person is going to give me a call next week, and I'm going to get it all squared away. And once that happens, I'll make sure that we make it live on our website or we shoot it out to all of our email followers as well. So I just thought that was pretty cool. Hey, let's do just a little bit of news of the week before we get on to the main part of the show, which, by the way, is going to be focusing on a topic that I think is on a lot of people's mind, especially when we round the first part of the year. How much and how do I know how much I'm going to need to retire? Going to be talking about that. Later on, we're going to be talking about taxes. Of course, tax weekend now is upon us. And then later on, saving, paying down debts, or both. You know, can you do both? Should you focus on one versus the other? So Doug Hughes will join us for a brief conversation on that. Well, U.S. health insurance from employers keeps declining. This comes out of Reuters. And planning for retirement is obviously tough enough, but when it comes to planning for retirement benefits, especially when you expect to receive them from employer and then they get changed on a short notice, that can throw a big wrench into things. But a growing number of U.S. employers are capping their risk of health insurance costs by sending retirees onto private exchanges or sending them a little bit of money so they can buy their own supplements. Two-thirds of employers actually provided health coverage back in 1988, the year I graduated high school. That comes from the Kaiser Foundation. But now only 23% of companies actually offer health insurance benefits. Healthcare is a major unpredictable expense from retirement. I mean, General Electric, who did this back in January of 2016, that affected a lot of people here locally, even if you worked for the old RCA, found this to be true. They disclosed that they saved $3.3 billion by sending their retirees into the exchange, and that's why they're doing it. They didn't ever expect to be paying for health insurance 30-plus years into retirement. I mean, that's why we've seen a demise of the pension plan as well. Speaking of longevity and insurance companies not really planning for this, a week ago, April 3rd, Sunday's paper, here the HT had a great article on long-term care insurance, less bang, more bucks. The premise of this was people bought these policies. They assumed that they would be there when they needed it the most. So they bought it when they were 55. Now they're 85, 20 years later. And all of a sudden, they get a notice their premiums are going up 50, 60%. It's been happening. It's going to continue to happen. Health insurance is what it is. It's not like life insurance where it's a fixed premium. These insurers, when they first came out, had no idea of the outlasting effects of Alzheimer's disease, which on average puts people in a nursing home about 2 to 3 times longer than the old statistics used to say of 2 to 3 years. So they're paying a lot of money, they're going broke, they're bleeding cash. So most insurers just backed out of the market completely. But unfortunately, when you're in your 80s and all of a sudden you get that notice, a lot of people are saying, well, heck with it, I can't afford it, I'm going to have to cancel it, which is a real shame. Don't do that. If you get a notice in the mail, or a parent gets a notice in the mail, and I would suggest if you're a you're a boomer out there with a parent that's in their 80s or 90s even, get on the duplicate mailing list with the long-term care company so you'll receive the notices that they get. Because a lot of times they'll say, okay, we're going to raise your premium, but here's some other options. You can reduce your benefits. You can go to an indemnity policy, which will take all the premiums that you've paid, put them into a policy, and you can use that pool up. But if someone reads it wrong, they might just cancel it and then not get anything at all. So just be careful about that. And then lastly, I was perusing the internet before the show, and I see this all the time, and I just finally became aggravated with it. But Ron Paul issues a surprise warning about gold. He suggests a new way of protecting yourself from a financial crisis, and it comes from this writer named Kelly Brown through Stansberry Research, which is actually a pretty credible source, but this is an advertisement. It's not real news. He says you'll never believe how bad the U.S. economy is until you hear Ron Paul, and you guys have seen this. If you've looked at this, he's a congressman out of Texas. You know, his son just ran for president. Here's the thing. I don't know what they're selling, but they're selling something. When the last time we had a financial crisis, which really was a crisis in 2008, I mean, it got so close that we weren't sure if people would be able to cash their paychecks. That's how much of a liquidity crisis we had. When you look at the assets that went up and those that went down, if you ask the average American today, what do you think happened in that financial crisis with gold? Do you think that it soared or do you think it went down? I would guess most people would say it went up. Well, when that financial crisis hit and when it was in full-blown effect, stocks were down, obviously. Bond prices, I mean, the credits were down. They were down a lot. Commodities, oil, you know, all everything down. And gold, silver, all that was down. The only thing that was up was basically U.S. Treasuries. That was it, in dollars. So whenever we had the financial crisis, everyone ran to treasuries, everyone ran to dollars, no one ran to gold, and it went down. So when you read these things, do I think you should own some? I don't care if you do or not. I mean, I kind of like it because it's kind of fun to handle. But when you run to it because you're scared, it's usually not the right thing to do. So when you see these things on the internet, look to see, number one, are they an advertisement? Are they sponsored? Most of the time they are. And I would just read it for entertainment purposes only, but don't go get too wrapped up into it and run and buy your ammunition and guns and gold and store them in your safe. You don't have to. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about how do you know what you need to retire. I'm going to take this segment on my own, and then later on we'll be talking taxes as April 18th actually approaches us pretty quickly. We're on the cusp of it. What can you do if you're not quite ready? And then later on, saving, paying down debts, or can you do both? Or what should you do? Doug Hughes will be joining us for that segment. We'll be right back, everyone. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, the big question that people have, I know they have it because they're in our office all the time talking about it, is do I have enough? How do I compare to others? I mean, that seems to be pretty important to people. Obviously, how much are they going to need? And what's interesting is, you know, the more you make, the more it seems that you're going to need. My buddies and I talk about this on a consistent basis. You know, I'm 46 years old, and I have friends that range from, I mean, that I run around with that are between about 40 and 55. And, you know, it's the same question that everybody has. And the older you get and the more successful you are in your job and career, the more money you make, and it just seems like the more you might need. And that is true if your spending also tracks that way. But most people in our industry, most financial planning software systems will say to you, you will need about 70 to 80% of your gross income in retirement to live the same way you're living today. Now, I'll tell you that that's a pretty decent rule of thumb for a couple reasons. One, your kids are probably grown. You don't have that expense. Two, whenever you really think about it, as an example, let's say that you gross $80,000 a year. You probably only bring home about 48 to 52 grand. That's $960 a week. But why is that? Well, it's because you're paying for FICA, which is just under 8%. Maybe you have a 401k deferral. Say that's 10%. You're paying your federal and state tax. There's another 16 to 20%. So right there, there's 35, 36, 37%. Maybe you're paying for some health insurance, union dues, some voluntary benefits like maybe life insurance. So if you do all the math, all of a sudden you say, all right, 80% of this number puts me right down to where I need to be, about $64,000 on a gross. Now, here's the thing. That's a good rule of thumb. You can go with that if you want. But personally, I like the bottoms-up approach. I like to focus on take-home pay. And the reason I like to focus on take-home pay, because most average people can relate to that. What's your take-home? And we've been saying that since we were, 15 years old. Well, hey, what do you bring home? So using the same math, I mean, let's say your take-home is about $52,000. You add on your federal and state tax. Now you're up to $64,000, just like the top-down approach. You end up at the same point. It's simple math. But then you have to answer the question, what do I do with my take-home pay? Where does it go? What kind of things will go away? What kind of things might be added? That all has to be taken into consideration. What about inflation? We need to figure that in, whatever you think it will be. I've been recently going with about 2.5%. I mean, when you look at the 30-year bond curve yield, I mean, that's pretty much what it's telling you, not a lot of inflation. So you can go with what you want there. And then you have to think about how much things are going to cost in the future with inflation. And some things are going to cost a lot more than the average inflation rate, like healthcare. Most people project that healthcare costs go up by around 5% per year, whereas other things, like we're talking about oil the last year, I mean, it's gone down. So technology, sometimes it gets a lot cheaper. So whatever you spend money on, you have to kind of take that into consideration. But let's go back to what you're spending. Let's make it real simple. Let's say that you have a mortgage and that's going to be gone, or maybe you have some student loans you've been paying off for your kids and that's going to be gone. And that means there's less money that you're going to need in retirement to feel the same way. And here's the really important thing. If you pay off your house well before retirement, make sure you capture those dollars into a savings plan right away. Or all of a sudden, you'll have more disposable income and you're going to get used to it. And then you're going to need more money in retirement to replace it. It's kind of a vicious circle. So if you pay your house off at 58 and you're saving, $1,500 a month, and all of a sudden you get to spending $1,500 more per month, then that's more money you're going to need to replace all this disposable income that you want. So capture it immediately, put it in a 401k, put it away into something, but just make sure you capture it the very next month. Make sure you do it. So let's go back to my example. You're bringing home $960 a week. That's about $4,200 a month. Now you have a $1,000 mortgage payment that's gone away, whatever. Now you're down to $3,200. You have to gross that up. You're going to need about $4,000 a month. You have some Social Security. Maybe it's $1,800. An old pension when you worked for Otis Elevator back in the day for $200. So now we only need about $2,000 from investments, and that's about $24,000 a year. And most people assume you can pull 3 or 4% out of those resources each year to provide that income. So that puts you at around a need of $685,000 to live about the way you want to live now. Also, health insurance. You've heard us talk about this. Income that you're going to need to pay for health insurance, medical expenses in retirement. Fidelity actually has some numbers. They say a married couple age 65 is going to spend about $250,000 in their lifetime on medical expenses that they probably hadn't planned for. So if you want to add that on, now you're going to need about $935,000. If you're single, maybe it's $810,000. But that's how you do it. And the bottom line is, it's really not that difficult to figure out. It's really just an assessment of your here and now, a discussion about where you want to go and be. That's really important. And quite honestly, some things that you're doing right now are probably just fine. I mean, I met with a great couple this week who he had said, hey, I think I need to be at around $3 million when I retire. I did all the analysis. I came back. It was about 3.2. I mean, you were spot on. And he said, yeah, it's kind of a, I thought that was about it. Some people are doing things right the way they should be doing it. Some things you're doing are going to get you there, but maybe in a more of a roundabout way. And then quite honestly, everyone I meet, and I'm probably as guilty as anything in my own personal life, some things we're doing are taking us away from where it is that we want to be. I mean, the goal is to get all three of those arrows pointing in the right direction. I would take some time, and I've been running an ad on the station here for a while, consult with someone that does this, that sees this real life stuff happen. I mean, it's really hard to get on an online retirement calculator, in my opinion, and get this stuff. I mean, it's just difficult. I mean, you can go on there and do some, stuff to get you close. But when it gets to the nuts and bolts, when the rubber meets the road, I mean, I think that's time when you sit down with someone. Here's the only things that really matter. How much have you saved so far? What are you saving now? What's your company match if you have one? How long do you plan to work? What's a reasonable rate of return we should expect on investments? And then does the math work? If it doesn't, then there's only a few things you need to do. You're going to have to work longer, save a little more. I mean, it's just a few moving parts. So we've been offering this through the ads for some time, but if you want to, if this is the year, 2016, if this is the year where you've said, all right, we're going to figure this out. If we're on the right track, where do we stand? What do we need to do? You're welcome to give us a call, and this is available to all of our listeners. We've been saying it's complimentary to cfci.us. Contact us, cfci.us. Say, I'd like to have someone look at this, and we'll put one of the advisors in touch with you. You can come out and sit down. They'll tell you what to bring, make it real easy. I've never had anybody go through this process that leaves and says, man, I wish we didn't, we wouldn't have come. And then you know, we've been talking about putting people on some maintenance plans where maybe they come in once a year for a small fee or something like that. But you know what? You're going to get a lot of out of this. And what I always tell people when they come in, yeah, it's complimentary. We're going to spend as much time as we need to make sure you get what you ask for. And when you get paid as an advisor, there's a lot of different ways that we can get paid. Obviously, you get paid fees, and there's commissions when you sell products like insurance or whatever. But there's also that way of getting paid when people talk good about you and refer people. So I know it sounds a little bit corny, but I've been saying it for years, and it works. I mean, I've been doing this for 24 years, and this cumulative effect of these complimentary meetings has really paid off. So when you come in, you know, don't expect there's some hidden agenda or whatever. I mean, they're just going to do right for you, give you the information you want, and I would suggest you do it. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, taxes are due this year on April 18th, thanks to Emancipation Day. That's a Monday. What if you're not ready? What are some things you can do? What about some last-minute tax planning strategies that you can do? Still not too late. We'll be back to talk about a few of those. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, it was brought to my attention today during the shredding event at our office. Again, thank you for all of you that came out. That was a blast. We had a great time. Weather was terrific. You know, we tossed a football around. We got real busy. We get slow. And it was a great time. But someone brought it up to my attention. They were a radio show listener. They came by the shredding event, and they said, hey, you know, at some point I had requested a copy of your book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. It's a resource for adults ages 50 and over, but I never heard back. And I thought, huh, that's interesting, because a few months ago, we did offer that up absolutely free for anybody that would like a free copy. And then I got to thinking, you know what, we didn't have that many requests. So possibly that could have slipped through the cracks, maybe a technical difficulty. I don't know what it was. But if you are one of those people that asked for a book and didn't get a book, please reach out to us again. Absolutely, reach out to us again. You can email cfci.us, but if that didn't work the first time, it may not work the second time, so it may be better you pick up the phone the old-fashioned way and give us a call, and you can email the station or whatever. I mean, if you're writing this down, it's 334-3190, 334-3190, and just say, hey, I didn't get my book. And we'll either leave one for you and stop by, or if that's not convenient, we'll put one in the mail to you. So apologized and gave that gentleman a book, of course, and sent him on his way, and hopefully that made amends with him. Hey, it is tax time. It's coming up quickly on us. Monday, the 18th, is tax day, and my notes are somewhere around here. But we got this extra day because of Emancipation Day, and basically, you know, that extended it to Monday because we're going to celebrate that on Friday. So anyway, but here you are, very last minute, you're putting stuff together, and you say, man, I just really don't want to do this. The weather's great, which I agree. Who wants to do taxes? You can file an automatic extension. Everyone can get one. It doesn't really matter. And what that doesn't mean, that you can't send the money in that you owe. But let's say that you typically get a refund, or maybe your taxes, you don't have to pay that much. You can file an extension, and it's good through October 15th. So then you have all summer long to get those taxes done. And I know for you wives out there listening, you're like, don't give my husband another reason to procrastinate with something else. But this is the facts, and you can do it. I do it almost every year because I'm so busy helping other people with tax-related issues. I just file an extension and move on. If you typically owe money, like I do, I'll send in a check on April 15th, or in this case, April 18th, to avoid paying any penalties and things like that. But also, hey, if you don't have the cash and you want to pay, you can go online. You can pay with a credit card. It does cost you some, so check that out. But maybe you get points on your American Express or your Capital One or whatever that helps mitigate some of that stuff. You can also ask the IRS to be your bank. I mean, the terms aren't too bad. You can go to irs.gov, check out installment plans. You'd be surprised. They can be pretty lenient when it comes to making payments to the IRS. Trust me, I've been there. I've done it. Also, IRA and SEP contributions can be made up until Monday this year, and I'd actually make those deposits like tomorrow just to make sure that they get in. And don't assume that the postmarks work. That's really not true. Some people believe that to be true, but I would rather have that money in the account, have it marked as a contribution. Don't rely on the postmark, so I would put those in probably tomorrow or walk them into your financial institution on Monday and make sure they get done. Also, qualified charitable distributions, I'm going to talk about that more in the questions of the week. I had that I wanted to discuss, how you can take money from your IRA accounts, if you're over 70 and a half, directly to a charity. It doesn't count as income. It satisfies minimum distributions. We're going to talk about QCDs for 2016. They have been made, quote, permanent. And then also, we've had to do a few of these this year, recharacterizations on Roth conversions. You did your taxes, you're like, oh no, I shouldn't have done that Roth conversion. You can recharacterize just as though it never happened. File your tax returns, it's all good. I had a gentleman this week who did a $16,000 Roth conversion because we'd figured out that's what he could do, still stay in the 15% tax bracket, all was cool, except I didn't know he was receiving a subsidy for health insurance on the affordable health care exchanges. Well, he was, and this Roth conversion messed him up, and he was going to have to pay a penalty or back, so we ended up doing a recharacterization and all was good. So you can do that up until October of the year following the conversion that you actually made. So that's called a recharacterization. So sometimes there's reasons to turn that conversion back around, and we've seen several of those this spring. And it's primarily related to the healthcare credits or the healthcare subsidies. All right, guys, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Douglas Hughes, the host of last week's show, is going to be joining us live on the phone. He's been teaching on this topic of paying down debts, being responsible with your money, stewardship. He's been talking about this for 15 years, but I wanted him to chime in on this topic. Saving, paying down debts, or should you do both? When we come back, Doug Hughes will be joining us live. This is Your Money with David Hayes. He was frugal before being frugal was cool. Doug Hughes joins us on the line. Hey, Doug, you know, this is a topic that you've taught about for many, many years. You've taught young people, you've taught old people, you've taught all kinds of people about saving, paying down debts, or both. You know, because when a person starts to think about, hey, I have some extra money, I have these debts that I really would like to focus on, but I also have, you know, a need to save for college education, I have a need to save for retirement. I mean, there's a struggle there of what comes first, the chicken or the egg, or should they really be doing both? So I thought I'd have you come on the air and talk a little bit about that.
Sure, absolutely. Well, first of all, David, I want to tell you, in a lifetime that hasn't been filled with a lot of compliments, the greatest compliment, or one of them I've ever been given, is when you describe me as being frugal before being frugal was cool, because it wasn't the coolest thing around back in the day.
But, well, now you're proud that you drive the oldest car in the office, and that includes all support staff and everyone. And
absolutely,
yeah. So every day someone has to say, "Hughes, when are you going to get a new car?" And yeah, I know you think about it and talk about it, but that badge of honor on that Toyota that you pull into the office with every day, I know it's pretty important to you. So we just like giving you a hard time, but you're absolutely right. I mean, there was a time where, you know, people lived high on the hog and they borrowed a lot of money, but now frugality is more cool than it used to.
It is. And so getting to the, the question at hand, you know, one of the things I learned a long time ago about getting, you know, when you have debt and dealing with debt, There's always something to do with your money, and debt just adds another layer. And so I think one of the first things that any listener would want to do is just make a list of the debts they have, but also just take a step back and determine in their mind, I'm going to take on one thing at a time. And what does that look like? So the question is, you know, do you save? Do you invest? Do you pay down debts? How do you do these things? So my rule of thumb is always this. You always need to have some form of savings in a savings account, a money market account, fully liquid, not based on how the market is doing, but it's there in case something goes wrong. After that, and it used to be, David, in financial planning, as we grew up in this business, that used to say to people that needs to be 3 months, because if you lost your job, you could get another one in about 3 months, typically, that would be, you know, a pretty similar job. But we're living in a different employment market now, and it might be 3 months to 6 months, might be a little reasonable. But what happens once you've got a few of those things conquered, and then you have this idea of, do I save money in like retirement plans, or do I pay off debt? And I always say to people that there always needs to be a stream going into like your 401k. So if there is a match involved or a match that is available, you need to make sure you get that money in to get that match. And then after that, you really need to design a specific plan to beat down whatever non-collateralized debt that you have. Typically, this means credit cards, you know, second liens, different things like that that are just kind of out there. They're higher interest rates. And you really need to spend your time focusing on getting through, pardon me, those particular challenges. It is an erosion of purchasing power over the long term. And debt always assumes the future. Debt always assumes you'll be able to make the same payments 1, 2, 3 years from now that you're making now. And it's a very challenging place to be. So from me, from my perspective, I've seen more people have success by having the, as we all know, at the emergency funds, getting the match in the 401k, and then after that, being very aggressive about paying down those debts.
One thing I want to talk to you about quickly, Doug, is the home. You know, a lot of folks will throw that extra $300 or $400 onto their house payment instead of putting the money into investments. My view on that is, if you continue to make the payments as scheduled and put the extra money into a 401k, let's say, you're probably going to be better off. And here's why.
Right.
Make inflation work for you, not against you. If you have a $1,000 mortgage payment today with 2% inflation, in 20 years it's going to feel like a $670 a month payment. If you put that extra $500 a month that you have onto your mortgage, your equity on your home pays you zero. It doesn't pay anything. The home may appreciate, but that equity that you're paying on pays you nothing. So in that case, I think it's important for people to understand what's the best use of that capital. I know we all want to pay our homes off, but if you're 35 or 40, 40 45 years old, you're going to be fine. You're going to be able to get that sucker paid down. I think what Doug was saying is the non-collateralized debt, primarily credit card debts, maybe it's student loan debt, those types of things. And as Americans, Doug, I mean, not everyone, to be quite honest, and you know this, is as disciplined as you've always been. I mean, heck, I remember the days where you would not buy Coke at the restaurant and then instead use that money to buy Coke stock and then dividend reinvest and use that to pay for the down payment for your first home. I mean, what kind of story is that? No one does that but Doug Hughes. So
that's right.
Americans are better typically at making a payment than they are at making a savings because, one, they're obligated. Two, it might screw up their credit. But if they just have to save, the only person they disappoint is themselves. So that's why I think for people, just continue to make those payments as scheduled, use that other money into the 401k, out of sight, out of mind. And you mentioned the company match real quick, Doug, that a lot of people get caught into the company match trap, which is I'm only going to put enough in there to get my match. And they're saying I'm going to do all I can. But, hey, whenever you push yourself, you'll be amazed what you can do. Out of sight, out of mind. If you don't have it, you won't spend it. Try it. I mean, try 8%, 10%, 12%. Just try it. Try it for 6 months and see what happens, Doug. And I'd be surprised, I'd be shocked that those kind of things didn't all of a sudden become habitual.
Yes. And, David, let me make one more point on that. When you're working with a truly qualified financial advisor or financial representative that really wants, you know, your best interest at heart, they will monitor not only, you know, is the market up, market down, or how your investments, they want to talk to you about the debts, and they will, you know, push you down this path that says, okay, once, you know, we get some of these credit cards paid or get some of the non-collateralized debt, as you mentioned, student loans, different things like this, once we get that, then we really need to be, you know, putting more into vehicles for retirement. They don't just leave the money on the table and say, you know, eat more pizza or take more extravagant vacations. So when you're working with someone, you need to make sure that that person is talking to you about the total picture, not just what's up, what's down, but savings rates. And, you know, it's interesting, David, savings rates used to be negative in this country, and after 2008, they became positive. And we're seeing more and more people are learning to save, which is a very good thing in this country that we're learning to save again and have positive savings rates. So, you know, hats off to everyone who's doing that. Keep doing that. But if you haven't started a savings plan, and I think that's kind of what we're getting at here, the very beginning point when you're having to make the decision between these things, David, one of the phrases that you coined, and I've used this, if I've used it once, I've used it 100 times, you need to make savings part of your payment plan. You know, you can get away with not putting any money into your savings account, but you can't get away without making your car payment. Not very long, anyway.
No, not at
and
all.
And so making savings part of your payment plan is a big opportunity, and it will make the difference down the road. One last thing, you also mentioned saving for college. One thing that we always say to people is that there's no such thing as a retirement loan. Make sure that your financial plan has short-term goals, medium or mid-term goals, which would be like college planning, and then long-term goals, which would be retirement. Don't forsake long-term goals just trying to meet mid-term goals. And what I mean by that is that, you know, there, David, there are ways to go after scholarships. We've had Class 101 on. There are different, you know, there are different avenues to look at different ways to deal with college expenses. And so, you know, some people don't put anything in the retirement account just so they can fund college. And we haven't seen that strategy work out too well over the long run.
Something that people need to do, and it's easy, especially if you have a job and you have a 401k, when a debt is paid off, save that money. Even if it's a car, a credit card, save it. So if it's a $400 payment and all of a sudden that goes away the very next month, up your 401k by $400. Then if you go to buy another car down the road, take out a loan, that's fine. Back down your savings until it's paid off. But here's some math, Doug, and I did the math on this, and I thought, man, I need to double check this, you know, measure twice, cut once kind of thing, because it sounded too good to be true. But if you're a 35-year-old, and let's say you just paid off a car payment, and it was a car, and the payment was $400 a month, and you drove that car for the next 5 years without making a payment, but you immediately started saving that $400, and you earned, you'll say, 7 or 8% on your money, in 5 years, you'd have saved up $29,000 by simply not having that car payment, but saving it. Now, you could either use that for the next car or finance a new one and keep saving. It's easier, folks, I know this, to spend it all in one fell swoop than it is to save it all back again. So I personally am a fan of just leaving that alone. That $29,000 could then grow to $175,000 by the time you're 65 without adding one more dime. Manage your cash flow. Doug just said, we're good at making car payments, terrible savers. Just like any good business, you have a business here to run. It's your life. You have to manage cash flow. So here's the way this math works. So at the end of 5 years, I didn't have a car payment. I now have $29,000 saved up. I buy another car, trade it in, get another car. I now have a payment again. So for the next 5 years, I don't save anything. My money grows, and then I stop, and I end up, making that payment into my savings again for another 5 years. And then I stop. And then when you do the math, just two times, Doug, just two times did I pay for a car and then drive a car for 5 years. Paid for a car for 5 years and then drove it for 5 years, but saved the payment for each of those 5 years that I was driving my old car. If you're 35 years old, you would have accumulated more than $378,000 by the time you're age 65. It works. Just don't stop making that car payment. Make sure that you set on that payment into a 401k, into a retirement, someplace, and it would be amazing how much money that grows to. Doug, good lessons to be learned here on the big show. Appreciate you doing the show last week. Appreciate you taking the time to call in tonight. This is right in your wheelhouse, this kind of stuff.
It is, and you know, David, I want to say this. All the things we're talking about can be done on any income. It's just making some adjustments to how money is being spent. And so success is available for everyone. We want everyone listening to know that.
Thank you, Doug. We're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, questions of the week. Again, can we make our SEP payments right up to the deadline, May or Monday the 18th? Also read on this week on Yahoo about how general powers of attorney might not always be accepted by all financial institutions. Have we ever heard about that? And is it true? I had a client or another financial advisor send me a question about some rollovers, and we also have charitable distribution questions and more. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Two too much month at the end of your money. That's an old saying from Doug Hughes as well. I texted him during the break and said, what's that old saying, too much this before that? And he said, I have too much month or whatever. My month is longer than my money. What did it say? I always mess that up. Too much month at the end of my money. I think a lot of people can relate to that, especially this time of year. It's tax time. I mean, golly, people are wanting checks from me. It's terrible. All right, have some questions of the week. Actually had one just at the Shred party. They talked about Ivy Tech changing retirement plans. Didn't get a chance to talk to the lady directly. It's come secondhand. I guess, I didn't know this, but they're changing retirement plan providers. And I thought they used TIAA CREF. And she said they were moving to Transamerica, which here's what happens when they change custodians. It's usually because maybe they got a better deal on fees or who knows what. I mean, you never know why, but they change. Usually they'll map your money over and try to put you in similar funds. Occasionally there'll be a blackout period, which is a little unfortunate, which means you can't really change your money around. And those are pretty short these days. It used to be months long back in the old days. So usually not that big of a deal, just getting used to a different website, different statement. So anyway, I wouldn't put too much concern on that. Had a question. Here we go. Can I make my SEP payment on Monday the 18th this year, like I heard you can IRA contributions? And he said, not that I wanted to wait to the last minute like I usually do. Well, I can tell you this person didn't come in today. My guess is they won't come in tomorrow, so they'll probably be there on Monday to make the SEP contribution. But the answer is yes, you can make only SEP and IRA contributions up to filing date, which is Monday 18th this year. Even if you file an extension, you still have to make the contributions before that time. Now, SEP contributions, there's some more leniency there because sometimes you back into those contributions. So anyway, that's the answer there. Read this week, I think it was on Yahoo Finance, that general power of attorney documents that I may have may not be accepted by all financial institutions. Have you seen that to be true? Well, I haven't seen that to be true, but here's usually what happens. The POA, and it's usually done at the time where they need the POA to be effective, has to be submitted to the financial institution and then approved before it can be used. So what happens, sometimes you'll send it in, they'll say, well, this one's no good for whatever reason. And I have had that happen maybe once, not very often, but I did read something that USAA, pretty popular insurance and investment company, does require their own POA. They won't accept the one that you have. So my suggestion would be that in your spare time, go by your bank, go by your brokerage firms, go by your insurance companies, whoever it is that you might need to use a POA for, give it to them, ask them to put it on file so that whenever you need it, it's already been approved. And then you might find out, oh, we don't accept general powers of attorney, we have our own, then you'd be able to take care of it that way. All right, I had a question from another financial advisor. I get a lot of these over the years just because of the other advisors knowing my connection with the Ed Slott organization. And I know that if I don't know the answer, I can get it quickly from his technical team as being a charter member of the elite group. And I'm going to see those guys again in May. Looking forward to that. I'm going to have Ed on the show as well. Ed actually has a tax practice in Manhattan, so we were going to try to have him on this week, and it just isn't going to work out. I mean, he's right up against the wall like every other tax preparer. So we're going to put him probably, we're going to try before I see him in May, or it will be after that. But sometime in the next month and a half or so, Ed Slott, the country's IRA distribution expert, will be on, and you've heard him here before. Pretty fired up guy. Gave us a killer quote for the back of the book. You can go to IRA, that's IRAhelp.com, and check Ed out. And also, we've mentioned this more than once. Ed has put out the definitive guide to required minimum distributions for baby boomers. It's a pretty lengthy piece. We're giving those out for free. We can email those to you. If you're not into reading 39 pages about required distributions, just want to know the basics, I have a easy as 1, 2, 3 one-pager on determining your distribution year, getting your imbalances, how to calculate it, what to do, and the penalties if you don't do it right. So if you'd like a copy of that, email us at cfci.us and contact us, and we'll get that email out to you. Again, the definitive guide for required minimum distributions for boomers, or if you have a little ADD like me, you can use the one-pager, as easy as 1, 2, 3. All right, another financial advisor asked, spouse passed away. The custodian is sending checks on his wife's IRA directly to him with no taxes withheld, which is the only option they gave him. if he didn't want to continue the contracts as is. These came from annuity contracts. She had three IRAs, now three checks. He plans to roll them over into his own IRA. He's 69, if that matters, and it didn't. Is the spouse passing away? Are those checks subject to the same rollover rules as they would be for his own IRA? Because if you take a check and it's made payable to you, you have 60 days to get it into your IRA and it not be considered taxable. It's an indirect rollover. You can only do one of those every 365 days. That's it. So the question is, if I have three checks, is that considered three rollovers? If so, then only one of them is going to count and the other two not. So I went to Bev at the EdSlot Group Technical Consultant, and she came back and she said, if the three checks came all at one time, then they may technically be able to consider that one IRA rollover. If they came separate times, they may not. And she suggested that, you know, you resubmit the checks, ask for one check back. Now, most people won't do that, so I think he's going to roll the dice and consider it one. But you always have the possibility of the IRS coming back and saying, nope, two of those isn't any good, and there's a 6% per year excess contribution to your IRA. Penalties get really big, gets really ugly. So I would be careful in a situation like this, and if you do count it as one rollover, document why you did it. All right, I got to take a break. I have three more terrific questions, but we're going to have to boot those to next week. But I'll come back, wrap up this week's show, preview what's happening next week. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Hey, in a couple of weeks, actually May 11th, we are doing a town hall meeting. It's going to be at the Bloomington Country Club, completely free of charge, and it's called Dealing with Dementia. You're going to learn helpful hints on intervention, resources available to you, how to pay for care, types of financial products available, and we're going to have our friend Kathleen Weber, guest here on the show a few weeks ago, there to help people who are dealing with this or who may be dealing with it in a big way down the road. So if you want to come, cfci.us, and we'll get you hooked up. Also, I'll be in New York this weekend and watching the craziness of the coming primaries with New York coming up. And then next week, Wayne Thacker, Ryan Belcher will be in the studio to talk to people who plan to have a pension, Social Security, and personal savings in retirement. It'll be a great show for you. I hope everyone has a terrific weekend, and we'll talk to you again next week. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.